Yeah, welcome to a special edition of the Hotspurs podcast. It is Saturday, the 1st of June 2013, and I've got an extra special guest on today. He is a Spurs legend. His name is Paul Walsh. How you doing, Paul?
Yeah, mate, how you doing? You okay?
Yeah, fantastic. Well, normally around this sort of time, obviously, you'd be on the telly at some ground somewhere talking to Jeff Stelling. So obviously that's all finished, and you're here talking to us. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's been a long season. Even watching it's a long season sometimes. So I'm glad it's over in some way.
Yeah.
Some good games along the way. But yeah, nice to have a bit of a breather.
And you're all signed up for next year?
Yeah, just signed for another couple of years at Sky, so that's great. So yeah, look, I'll be looking forward to that in about 2 months' time.
Yeah, have a nice break. Now, yeah. I know we got you on today. You met my dad a couple of times. One of the times, I mean, my dad's flown out today for the Footballers Classic in La Manga, and I know you were there last year or the year before. And I was wondering, is that good bit of banter with all the football guys that go out there?
Yeah, I think when you stop playing, the thing that keeps you going is some of them trips where you do get the old sellers, and we've got that one thing in common all the time: football. But we also like golf. So there's a few events like that that I play on. I actually couldn't make the Footballers Classic this year, so I'm actually going out to play in Barbados to play in a British Airways event, with the poor Man City, Spurs, and an all-star team.
Oh, okay. So the first port of call, being a Spurs fan, is have a little word in Joe Lewis's ear, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I don't know if he'd be there, but what do you want me to say to him then?
Well, a striker would be ideal, and then Bale, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I think the Gareth Bale one might just get away from you a little bit. I mean, it's one of those. If an absolute crazy offer comes in, I know the fans hate it. It's happened before, and I think it might happen again because, if something mad comes in, 60, 70 million, I think Tottenham, would have to consider it. I mean, for all his brilliance, what you could probably do generally with the team for that amount of money might in the long run be better for the club. But it's always sad if you do lose a player of that calibre, and he's been a match winner on several occasions this season. There's no getting away from that. But you might be able to get a couple of match winners who make you a better all-round team, because you can't just rely on Gareth Bale to dig you out every week, or a lot of the weeks, not every week, but a lot of the weeks, which he did.
No, absolutely right. And we have to have a reality check sometimes. And we can't lose the fact that we did lose fantastic players over the year. I mean, you played with two or three of them in terms of Chris Waddle, Gazza, of course.
Gazza.
When those guys left, it was like, it's the end of the world. How are we possibly going to replace Waddle? Well, Waddle went, and then I think we got Lineker the next season, who of course can stick the ball in the back of the net. And then Gazza left, and all right, we did kind of plummet after Gazza left. But how are you going to replace Gazza? I mean, I was wondering, you were in that great side, the FA Cup side and what have you. What are your sort of memories of, those times?
Yeah, I mean, we had some good players, like you just mentioned. I mean, to start with, as you say, Chris Waddle. But, Tottenham, I'm afraid to say, at that stage, were, still a selling club when the big boys came along. And they could hang on to him. It was a great contract for Chris Waddle to go and play in France. So he wanted to go. Tottenham wanted the money. Sort of made sense all round, really. But it's always, like you said, sad to lose a great player that you've had for the club. But then Lineker came in, who was at the other end of his career. He, was out of favour at Barcelona. And he came in and provided sort of goals. And Gazza being there, a bit of genius in the midfield. And, it was a good side. We didn't quite have enough to be right up there. But that's why we was a cup team that on our day could beat anybody. But on a bad day, we could be, poor as well at times, considering the players we had. So to be in that top four, you've got to really get that consistent form that everyone's striving for. But there's a lot of competition at the top, isn't there? That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, those days, of course, the creativity was just amazing. And we were a great side to watch with Chrissy Waddle and, and Gazza, and of course yourself. I mean, when I spoke about yourself possibly being on the show, and you know, not just that, but over the years, every single Spurs fan I've ever talked about, you know, whenever you talk of the great players, you mentioned Paul Walsh, and I haven't ever heard anybody say, you know, not so sure. Everybody absolutely loved you. And do you feel that when you meet Spurs fans around and they come up to you, do they sort of, you know, go a bit tongue-tied and what have you, as I'm feeling a little bit now,
I get a reasonable reception, you know, when I go back to Tottenham. But if I'm perfectly honest with you, out of all the clubs I play for, I would have to say, if I'm hand on my heart honest, Tottenham fans never ever saw the best of me.
Yeah,
I was an 85% of what I was, for several reasons, which I won't really go into, but for several reasons. And I never really played anywhere near my best. So for fans to still think, I was half decent, I've got to be happy with that, because I never, in my opinion, you know, from my standards that I set myself, I never hit them at Tottenham, I didn't think. Or might have done occasionally, but not nowhere near often enough. And that was disappointing for me, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of, you know, obviously when you played, with Gary Lineker, for example, there was a time, obviously, infamously, when you scored the hat-trick and then Lineker was fit the next week and I think it was Venables picked Lineker, and it's like, oh, for goodness sake, you know, what more could you do? And then there was other
times... Actually, you're picking on the wrong player, actually. It was Paul Stewart.
Oh, was it?
It was Paul Stewart. No, Lineker was out, but it was Paul Stewart who really, I felt, should have been left out at that time. I mean, yeah. Stewie was a slightly different player to me. But at that time, he hadn't exactly set the world alight in terms of goals that season. I stepped in and got 3 goals. And I think the league you expect you to play the next game.
Yeah.
And if you don't perform, then maybe it changes again. But, you know, that was massively disappointing me. And that was part of my problem with Venables at times. Obviously, me and him didn't always see eye to eye. I had to have that out with him a little bit. But, it's one of those. You know, he's the manager. He picked the players. But there was times I thought I should have played and didn't, and that was quite galling for me.
He also seems to have you as his saviour a lot of the time. That's the way it was to us Spurs fans. You know, we'd be 1-1 or 2-1 or whatever, and then, you know, half an hour to go, bring on Walshy, and most of the time you come on and turn the game around.
Well, yeah, maybe there were times when that did happen, but if you're a player, I bet you've noticed this season. Edin Dzeko, when he came off of Man City, he absolutely hated being labelled a super sub type situation. And I'm no different. It's not a great tag. It's nice that you see your time coming, but you almost become a victim of that in the end, because, the manager, you become an impact player or a player that can't start a game in certain people's opinions because of that. And that's not the case, really, but... So I think, it's always great just to get on the pitch and make a contribution, but really, that wasn't really where I wanted to be. I wanted to be starting the game.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that, and I don't want to have another downer, but I've got to ask you, when you did the header in the cup final that hit the bar, did you think that was going in?
It was a strange header. I mean, it was looping. As I headed it, it was looping towards the far post, and I'm just thinking, is it going to creep in? Just wasn't sure. It was above the crossbar when I looked at it. All of a sudden, it started dipping down. It hit the underside of the bar, and somehow I think it went away for a corner. And from that corner, we scored the goal, I think. And, don't get me wrong, it would have been great if it had gone in. I'd have been jumping around like a lunatic, but it didn't quite happen. But at least it contributed to the corner, it contributed to the winner, if you like.
Yeah, that would have been amazing. Now, I have to tell you, Paul, also... A little lovely story for me, which was a day before the cup final, a couple of days before, my dad had said, I'll tell you what, let's make a weekend of it. We're going to stay up in London. And so we decided to stay at the Royal Lancaster Hotel. Well, as we arrive, as you will probably have guessed by now, up turns a team coach and off steps Tottenham Hotspur. Now, I've actually gone into delirium. I think I was about 14 or 15 at the time. And, you know, my dad's like, calm down. And anyway, what was great was as we got into the lift, Gazza got into the lift and I think Mabs as well. And Mabs was brilliant. You know, he's like, you know, how you doing, you Spurs fans and all this. And then you walked in with the long blown flowing locks and a cap on, and you was just joking around. And I think my mum took a bit of a shine to you, actually. And you were just joking around the whole time. I mean, you know, the camaraderie in that dressing room must have been fantastic with all those characters at the time. And I suppose Mads was trying to calm you down. I don't know.
Yeah, all right. Gaz was a bit lively. And, you know, I could be a little bit excitable on the day. And, we had a good bunch of lads. There's always a bit of stick flying about, a bit of banter. But, you know, that's what makes it. And if anything, that's what I miss. Going back to your first question about, you know, going on these trips with the ex-foot players and that, you know, straight away, your dad the other week at the Golf Classic, you know, getting together with Russell Osmond, I hadn't seen him for years, and all of a sudden they sit around and drink like your best mates. It's a strange feeling. Yeah. The camaraderie that all ex-players have between themselves. And, you know, we certainly had that at Tottenham, maybe too much of it at times, but, yeah, that's what keeps you going. And that's what I miss when I stop playing, is, you know, that everyday involvement in the dressing room, the crack with the lads. You know, I don't think modern day football's quite like that anymore.
No.
I loved it. I loved every minute of that.
Do you, I mean, you play for obviously a few clubs, grew up in the Charlton area as I did. But my dad was Charlton and what have you, but my granddad was Spurs, so I went with my granddad, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah.
But obviously, growing up in the Charlton area, so after football, do you sort of, what's the first team you look for? Is it Charlton, or do you look at all your clubs? Or
No, yeah, I mean, listen, I look right across the board and see how they're all doing, really. I never left the club thinking I hated this place. Everywhere I went, I enjoyed
to
different levels. And I look out for all of them, you know. And I'm looking, you know, I look out for Tottenham, I look out for Liverpool, even, you know, Man City. I look out for. I had a great couple of years at Man City.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed.
And I think weren't you voted like the greatest ever Portsmouth player or something recently?
I'm not sure, mate.
But you had a good couple of years there, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Listen, when I left Tottenham, I didn't really want to be going down to the Championship or the equivalent of the Championship. So I was a bit disappointed that that was even happening to me. Again, that's another whole story. But, you know, so I went down and was determined to make the most, and not get out of it, but just make the most of it. But because I went down there with that sort of attitude, I ended up doing a lot. And Man City coming along and sort of plucking us away. So that had a, you know, I enjoyed it at Portsmouth massively, once you get your head round the environment. Because, it's, you know, you've been at Liverpool and Tottenham for 8 years, and then you go to Portsmouth and the surroundings, the training facilities, they're just not as good.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a culture shock. And then all of a sudden you adjust, get used to it, and get on with it. And once I got on with it, we got to the playoffs, and it was an exciting season. I really enjoyed it. But really, I was always hankering to want to be back up in the top flight.
Yeah.
So when Man City came along, that was great. You know,
destroyed us in one game, didn't you?
the 5-2 game of Ozzy's famous five. I should have had a hat trick that day. I only got two. But I missed the easiest chance of the lot. And there's a header straight at Ian Walker from across from the right side. And luckily for me, Noel Quinn headed in the rebound. it's always nice to put one over on a team that's let you go.
Yeah. But we didn't let you go as fans. I mean, you were one of those guys that when you left, it was like, hey, wait, hang on a minute. Don't sell him. You know, we bloody love that guy. What's going on? So.
You know, managers make decisions, and you know, as players, you're a bit of a victim of those decisions, or sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're winning on those decisions because clubs are buying you. You're in a better situation, so that's just the merry-go-round of football.
Yeah, no, brilliant. Just a couple more, if you don't mind. You know, I always ask the ex-players, what was it like when you used to play against Arsenal? You know, because us as fans, you know, I don't need to tell you how different we feel. You know, almost sick, almost nervous, almost can't stand the 90 minutes until the final whistle goes, especially if you've won. What was it like in the dressing room playing those games? I mean, you know, the semi-final and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I was only a sub in the semi-final. I never got on. But, that always never quite as exciting for me. The fact that I wasn't starting just didn't make it as exciting. It's at Wembley. It's a great occasion and all the rest of it. And, you know, I managed to score the winning one game against Arsenal. So I've got that on my CV. derby games are great. I mean, I play some big derbies, you know, Liverpool, Everton, Man City, Man United, you know, Spurs, Arsenal. There's some good ones there. But at the time, I'd have to say that Arsenal were the top two.
Yeah.
That made us always sort of a little bit second best, which was always a bit disappointing. But we always nicked a draw. We were always under our own against them. But in terms of the consistency over the season, they were obviously a bit better at that time.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing, and now it's kind of, you know, we're so neck and neck the whole time.
Yeah.
When you go on Soccer Saturday, when you're actually in the studio, do you go on at the same time as Charlie Nicholas or Paul Merson?
No, I mean, we come in at 3 o'clock when the games start.
I'm just wondering what the interaction is like with those guys, because obviously you played with them, and
if you're in the studio, I mean, obviously, which I don't do the Saturdays that often. If you're in the studio, it's a good banter out of you.
Yeah.
But you only really get that when you're in the studio. When you're out on the road where I am, you know, obviously you're on your own, so you're just reporting back on the game. It's not quite the same. Still great, but it's not quite as good. But, so in the studio, I do the midweeks in the studio a bit more.
Yeah.
So I get a bit of that from there on the occasional Saturday. So, I still get... still get that sort of situation, but the Saturday is the best one because obviously you've got longer time to discuss the issues that are going on.
Yeah, and Colin, who I normally do the show with, won't forgive me if I don't ask you, why does Phil Thompson always do the Spurs games?
I really don't know. You'll have to ask the producer that one. I ain't got a clue. Can't help you.
Yeah, no, he does. He does, Colin.
But he got bombed off the Liverpool games because he was so biased.
That's
so,
right. Tell that. But now he always does the Spurs games, and I don't know. It's him every time.
We can't. What happened was because of Phil Thompson basically being biased towards Liverpool.
Yeah.
It meant that they came up with a policy where none of us could actually do our ex teams. Which meant I couldn't do Tottenham. I couldn't do Liverpool. I couldn't do Man City, and even Portsmouth. A few years ago, we were in the top flight. I couldn't do Portsmouth.
Yeah.
It meant I ended up doing sort of lots of great games a lot of the time because of that. But, it's all his fault.
Oh, dearie me, no.
Big nose.
But look, I mean, it's been brilliant to chat with you. I'm just gonna say, you know, I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, and I always ask. I mean, if you've got a favourite memory or a favourite goal that you could recollect from your Spurs days?
I'll always remember a little glancing header against Arsenal to make it 2-1, or not made it 2-0, but it was still 1-2-1. I can't remember the way the scoring went.
Was that did Samways get the first one? Was that that game?
Listen, I can only just about remember me scoring. I can't remember what order the scoring was in. Who else got the other goal? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago now, you know. And not all the football, you know, when we played was televised, so you haven't got every game on, you know, DVD that you can sort of go back and think, I'll have a watch of that.
Yeah, people forget that. But there was a great game, I thought, where you played at towards the end of the season against Everton, where we beat 2-1, and you scored a brilliant kind of a shot come chip around Neville Southall. What a brilliant goal that was.
I was thinking about that when you asked the question, because... I scored two that day, and I did the second one. I think it was the second one. It might have been the first one. I can't remember that. But it was a turner into the top corner. I got the ball in the edge of the box. There's a lot of bodies there, and I just drifted it into the far corner. It was, good goal. I do remember that one. But because the other one was against Arsenal and all the rest of it, sort of makes it that little bit extra, you know? But that in terms of a finish was a good goal, the other one.
And you came on, was it against Sunderland or maybe Southampton at home? And I think we were 3-1 down. And you came on and absolutely tore it up for the last 20 minutes. It was a joy to watch. But
I remember that as well. I mean, I got a couple, and I think maybe it's 3 each. That's always nice. But it's back to that question again about, you know, you come on and do that, and in front, but you still don't get a start.
Yeah.
That was the most galling part for me a lot of the time.
Yeah. Did you ever find out what Gazza wiped on your hair coming out for the FA Cup final?
Not a clue, mate. I didn't even know he wiped anything on me. So he just told me something
You know, as he came out, he's like poking his tongue out, and I think he might have just been playing with your locks. I'm not sure.
No, he might have just been mucking out, stroking the hair or something, you know. Yeah, he never knew what to do next, did he, this guy?
Brilliant. Have you got any little Gazza stories you could fill us in with, just finally, or...?
Only once we was coming back from Southgate and we was a bit hungry and we went in the Southgate roundabout. There's a Wimpy on the roundabout.
Yeah.
And we went in there and so he ordered double chicken chips, typical him. So I'm up the jump paying the bill and I said, "Gaz, anything else you want?" He said, 99. So because it was Gaz, the fella's whipped him up the biggest 99 you've ever seen in your life with a chocolate flake in the top. As I've got the change back, I've turned around and Gaz's, the flag's gone, he's wearing half of it round his face. We get in the car and we're driving up the road and there was this cyclist, proper cyclist, got handlebars, helmet on, all in one suit, you know, the full Monty, and a little backpack on. Anyway, as I indicate to overtake him, I noticed the lowering of the window to my left hand side. The next thing, there's a flick of the cone and the ice cream was flying through the air. As I've gone past the fella, I've looked and it's just splattered him straight in the face. It's all down his face and all of the ice cream. And we were giggling like a couple of school kids and we pulled up in the traffic lights about 200 yards up the road.
Yeah.
And we're laughing like a couple of kids. I'm looking in the mirror and all of a sudden I said, "Gaz, I've got to tell you, the fella's got his head down, he's pedalling very fast." You know, suddenly Gaz has started sort of, you know, realising, "Oh, what have I done?" And, the guy caught up with us. The lights weren't even thinking of changing. We're at Oakwood now. And, the fella threw his bike on the floor. Gaz absolutely put it, put the button down on the door. The fella banged on the window. Gaz reluctantly lowered the window. And the fella, out of his backpack, pulled out a pen and a piece of paper and went to Gaz, "Can you sign that for us, please, Gaz?" It was ridiculous. After he's just done him with an ice cream in the face.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Well, if that fella's listening, get in touch with us.
He was always a bit full on. Yeah, I didn't know what to do next. But he was intense, but good fun. And I hope he's well if he ever listens to this.
No, he's brilliant. Well, he's a legend. And I'll keep going back. I mean, that if ever, you know, I've got the old video VHSs of, those sort of 88, 89 seasons and all that. And they are a joy to go back and watch. You know, I've got a little boy I'm going to be showing him in a few years. But great stuff. All right, Paul. Well, listen, thanks ever so much for chatting to us. As I say, I've kept this as a bit of a secret. We're on Twitter and Facebook and everything. And I said, we've got Spurs legend coming on. People are asking me who it was and what have you. And I know that when they listen to this, they'll go, "Oh, blimey, Paul Walsh, brilliant." You know, and they'll be very as excited as I was to chat to you. And thanks very much for doing this. And, all the best for the future and everything. It's been an absolute joy. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers. All right, cheers. Thanks a lot. Bye now.
His name is Paul Anthony Walsh. Born 1st of October 1962. In Plumstead, a part of London, football is all he knew. I always remember him being quick and small in height and frame, but my memory will always and forever be his flowing, long blonde mane. Paul came down from Liverpool for about £500,000 and a partnership he made with Paul Stewart, which I'm really glad he did. His debut came at Old Trafford, but I remember him opening against the scum. I remember him in the cup final with a winner's medal won. He was capped 4 times by England, scoring once for his country's pride. But I have to say, I loved him at Spurs and he played well in a decent side. Names like Stewart and Lineker, Gordon Jury also came along. But I did think we let him go too early. His Spurs career they should have prolonged. He played a bit more after Tottenham and various colours you could see, and I will always remember them flowing locks when I see him now on TV. A pundit and a good one too, and I'm sure he'll be okay, and I'm glad to write this for one of my idols and had the pleasure to see Paul play.